Live from Houston, Texas, this is Big Ideas Small Business with your host, Laura Camrath and Brian Gendron. And now, the music of Max Flynn.
I'm starting to feel a little crazy again. I think it's time I start to pack my...
So here we are, Big Ideas Small Business. Laura, how are you today?
I'm doing pretty awesome. How are you, Brian?
I'm doing great. So excited to introduce our guest today, Mr. Wes Middleton. How are you?
Hey, man, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming. So Wes is the managing partner of a CPA firm here in Houston, not just any CPA firm, an excellent CPA firm in my mind, such a terrific culture at this organization. And he wrote a book, came out last year, right, 2017, called Violent Leadership.
Yes.
About, well, really his entrepreneurial journey, but certainly goes into how they built this firm and this culture. And it's a really terrific read. So we're going to talk about that today.
Okay.
One of the things that I wanted to start with was I got this book from Troy Sanchez. He's one of your employees.
Okay.
Handed it to me on the way out of one of your events. And this is, I guess, the beginning of this year, and I read the book, and a friend of mine, Austin, made partner at his law firm, and I said,
"All right,
Austin, you got to read this thing." And really, anybody in the services industry, we're in IT services, marketing services, I recommend this book. So that's the first time I read it, and then it's also on audio.
It is, yeah.
So I picked that up, shared it with Laura, and reread it.
Okay, well, that's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thanks for putting it out there. So one of the things we like to start with is if you could share a little bit about your journey, how you got here, just spend a few minutes, and who Wes is.
Sure. You can tell by the accent that I'm not from anywhere close by. So I moved here. I was born in Mississippi. Grew up there, part of a firm. Moved here in 2000 just because I felt like the game was played at a much higher level than I was going to experience there in our hometown. And so from there, man, it's just been it's been the greatest ride of my life. A lot of ups and downs, a lot of failures. You know, people look at the success and think that's what it's all about. But the truth is, it's probably more about the missteps that were made than it is about the success. So I was with a firm here in Houston for, I don't know, 7 or 8 years. Left thinking I was joining an organization that really gave me the platform to implement some of my ideas, and come to find out it didn't sort of work out that way. And in hindsight, I kind of wished I'd went out on my own then, but we didn't. So in 2013, my partners and I, we left and launched Middleton Rain and Zapata. And you know, that's where the story really began, about how we were able to implement our ideas and really do things different than most firms do them. And it's been nothing but it's been successful. It's been great.
It has, and it's been fun to watch that success of the time that I've known Troy and you, and
yeah,
and continue to have success. I love it, and you did this in the book too.
Okay.
You said there's been some failures along the way.
Yeah.
And so really relatable failures. He had this idea to take every, you know, back in 90s, right? People would go to the movie store. Remember this, Laura? You go pick out
the video store,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Please Be Kind, Rewind. And then you get a pizza and you go home and watch it. Well, Wes brought both those together in a service where they would deliver that to people's homes, right? You want to share a little bit about
that?
Yeah,
well, I mean, you know, it was a real small town. So, you know, it wasn't like it was in a city of 100,000 or anything. It was a real small town. But, yeah, the idea was, well, if we are delivering pizza and we have the video on the shelf, wouldn't that be a competitive advantage if, you know what, you tell us what you want, we'll bring you both.
Our pizza comes with a video.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and you never leave your home. And so, yeah, it was a great idea. And it worked. I mean, it's not that it didn't work. It did work. It worked very well. But, you know, that's where the failure came in, was the failure to see what was coming, which was, I mean, who goes to the video store anymore, right? Where's Blockbuster? They're nowhere around. So that's just an example of, it made me aware of, you just absolutely have to be aware of technology disrupting your business plan. I mean, no one saw it coming, I don't think, not in the way that it rolled out. So
And it's appropriate that you started the book or in the beginning of the book with that story, because a lot of the concepts are about keeping up with change.
It is. And that was the thing to learn from it was, you know, and today it's moving so much faster today than it was 20 years ago that, you know, it took a while for the whole Blockbuster thing to unfold, and Netflix is here. I don't know how long that's been, but that's been a very, very long. But now, you know, in 1 year you can have an equivalent disruption happen because technology is evolving so fast. And if we're not careful, we get caught up in today and how comfortable it is, and disruption's coming. Yeah, it's not to be scared of it, just acknowledge it and be prepared.
Embrace it and embrace create it. A culture that can take on those challenges, bring forth ideas to innovate, right? Yep. And that's kind of what you have over at MRZ.
It is, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I got a great team who puts up with me and aren't scared to, you know, they're not scared of the ideas. And they're not all good ideas, let's be clear. You know, all ideas are not good ideas. They're just ideas. And so what's been great about the team in MRZ is they've embraced every crazy idea. Everybody's jumped on board with it. My partners have just been lockstep with and so that's what drives the success, too, is when everybody's rowing the boat in the same direction, so to speak. Yeah. So I think that culture is very much permeates our organization.
Beaten to the same drum. And, Laura, this is right up your alley. So mm-hmm. a lot of their strategy has been inbound marketing, so sort of authoritative positioning, putting out a lot of content that traditional CPA firms keep tight to the vest. They don't want to give away their intellectual property.
Sure.
But their strategy has been very different. And Laura, with her company, Zebra Marketing, drives a lot of that for her clients. So.
Man, it's amazing that, and it's not just CPAs. I think it's lawyers, it's IT professionals. You go down the list, more especially professional services, who think somehow the knowledge they have is so secretive and like you can't find it. And the reality is we found that the more we put out there, the more information and people that they can sort of do it yourself is what they think they're doing, which is okay. But when it really comes down to it, most people can't execute on the plan, and they're going to need you to execute. The knowledge is out there. If they don't get it from you, they are going to get it from somewhere. Why not be the source of that, right? And so, yeah, it's uncomfortable because we weren't educated that way, right? We're smart because of what we know and we share with you. Okay, well, we're in a different age. And so inbound marketing is just all those things you talked about. It's an incredible part of what we do.
Yeah, and that's the thing. When you put that content out there, you become the leader. You become the thought leader. And people are going to think of you when they need that help.
They are. I mean, we put the actual tools we use. So we'll take schedules and things we use for clients. They're available. Just go read the blog. We're going to get your information when you download there's a call to action there. We're going to get something there.
Of course.
But it's a usable document template that we use for every client. And what happens is people, they see it and they have good intentions, but when it really boils down to it, they're going to need a little help along the way being taught. And they end up having a different respect for you when you're the teacher, and you're helping them along the way.
Yeah,
that's correct. And so one of the other things that I always appreciate about MRC is the culture. Whether it's the shuffleboard table, Carbach on tap, those are keys to my heart. But also Golden Tee. And by the way, if anybody from MRC is listening, I am top of my game.
Are you?
We used to have one in my office for about 5 years. So that's a challenge.
Gauntlet.
To the best.
Yeah.
You let me know who it is, MRZ. But a lot of people are afraid to put those types of things in the office, and you guys embraced it. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. You know, and people ask, well, you can't just go buy a pool table and put it in the office and think somehow that changes your culture. Because the whole basis of all of that, the result is not, it's not about the fun and games. It's about the trust. It's, do you trust your people to act like adults?
Yeah.
Right. And so we have on our wall what we call the adult agreement. And it's on our wall and it's posted, and it just says, this is how adults at MRZ act. It's very, you know, it's about, and we go through some very characteristics, you know, and so we want our people to act like adults. And to do that, we feel like we have to teach them or treat them as adults, right? Which is, you can have this fun and games and these things, because as long as you respect the boundaries, you know the rules, you know what's right, you know what's wrong, come on, you're going to sit there and play games all day, well, you're not going to be here very long, right? So It's really about building that trust, and the organization is the reason we're able to do that. And that's what the core, sort of the core value there that is built on is really not fun and games. It's really about trust that we build.
Yeah, I think that's really awesome. I mean, I think, and just based on my experience in, you know, even schools I went to as a kid, you know, people rise to what you expect of them.
They do.
If you don't expect very much of them, then, you know, it's like, okay, well, I'm already, you know, you're already expecting I'm not going to, you know, rise to that level. When you expect, you know, a really high level out of people and you give them that trust, I think, you know, they want to give it.
Yeah, they're empowered by that. And I think a lot of organizations, the failure that I saw, that I observed coming up, I think it's just all through our culture today, we go to the lowest common denominator.
Right.
We take the one person that's violating the rules, and so we change the rules because that one person, instead of, whereas for us, what we're going to do is, you know what, if you're that repeat guy, we're just going to ask you to leave the firm because you don't fit our culture. You clearly can't act like an adult, so you need to go to daycare where you can have rules that, because we're just not going to do that. And so we're not going to let one or two people, the minority, disrupt what the vast, not just a small majority, but the vast majority of our people, how they act and perform. We're going to support that.
It's kind of counterculture, right?
It is.
Like a lot of the things and laws that we create are based on stupid people doing stupid things.
It is.
And not what it should be, which is let's reward excellence.
Yeah, and so and it happens even with our, you know, we talk about in our kids today, the whole participation trophy thing. To me, it's the same exact thing where instead of rewarding and recognizing the high performers and really help and making that something others achieve, we boil it down to the lowest common denominator. Mm-hmm. And so that disincentivizes your performance. And does it feel good to look at somebody and go, I'm sorry, you don't measure up to our culture here. We're going to help you do something different. It's uncomfortable, but it's what's good for, it's the greater good.
And there's a couple other things too that y'all do that's very untraditional. So I know Troy takes advantage of this. Troy Sanchez, unlimited vacation time.
Yeah,
unlimited, but certainly
we call it open PTO.
Open PTO. Yeah. So that's a little unique as well.
Yeah, and that's back to we found ourselves every year, you know, worried about how much time people have taken, how much they didn't take, how much carries over. And there's always this fight about, well, we got to carry over 40 hours or like banking. It's like, oh my, I mean, how much time do we spend focused on what people don't do instead of focused on what they do, which is here's our job expectations. Here's our role expectations. They still have to be accountable. They got to request time off. We track in our HRS system. We do all those things. They're accountable. It doesn't change accountability. But there's no reason for me or anybody in our organization trying to micromanage how somebody spends their life.
Have you ever heard of a book called The 7-Day Weekend?
I have heard of it.
Yeah, we read that in my Rice MBA.
Okay.
And I think it was, I don't know if it was my organizational behavior class, but the book is basically about a company in South America who said, okay, we're going to let all of our people create their own schedules. We're going to let them, you know, we're going to have hammocks in the office. We're going to let people pretty much do whatever they want. And everybody said, this is never going to work. Your business is going to fail. Nobody's going to do anything. But in fact, they were able to pay their people less, and their company loyalty was just ridiculous.
Right.
Nobody wanted to leave the company. They were willing to take less pay just to work there. And it was because they said, hey, we trust you, and we know that, you know, if we extend this trust to you, that you're going to live up to our expectations.
Yeah.
And they did.
Yeah, and I think conceptually that, you know, that does that. And I think every type industry has a different level they can take this to.
Mm-hmm.
You just do. There's just some things. When you have the ongoing client interaction on a daily basis, that presents some challenges for us that maybe other professions don't have.
Mm-hmm.
But we're always open to testing, you know, and seeing what we can do to make it better.
I think it certainly fits in the professional services world. You know, I see as I scale my IT company, a lot of these things would fit really nicely. But it doesn't fit everywhere, obviously. You know, it depends.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's an element of open office and all those things that, you know, for us it would have been, there's a line where it becomes counterproductive, right? And you kind of go, yeah, where's that line? I think it's different for everybody. So we don't, you know, we're not trying to look like Google. I don't think we could do it exactly like Google does it. But can we adopt some of the things that tech has taught us about culture and the workspace? Absolutely we can.
Well, let's take tech. So another area that you spend a lot of time on is on innovation and technology. And I'm actually writing an article. I'm a guest contributor for the Houston Business Journal. I'm writing an article that's very similar to something you write about in your book, which is the millennial workforce and you know what you need to provide millennials. So that's what my article is going to be about. What technology do they need? So you guys have embraced that in a big way and continue to.
I think it's necessary. And the struggle there is the leadership in a lot of organizations today are from my generation, so they're Gen Xers. And so we didn't grow up with an iPhone in our hand or the technology that even the generations that are coming into our workforce today, to them they grew up with these things in their hands. And so to them it's just second nature. They don't even can't imagine life any different, whereas we can, right? We remember paper and those things that we use to do our jobs. So I get the struggle. And it has to be intentional effort to stay ahead of technology. It's painful. It is not easy. I don't like all of it, quite frankly. I mean, it's not always comfortable for me. It just isn't. Mm-hmm. But it's necessary. It's necessary to provide that.
That's right. And so do you have any example? One of the things we always do is what is an application or some software that you've discovered that's really changed how you operate? Do you have any recommendations or anything you've come across lately?
Man, we use so many different – we try a lot of different things. I'll tell you the thing that most recently that I've adopted that has, I think, has been incredible, and I'm surprised – especially when I talk to other CPA firms, I'm surprised that they don't – so first of all, Microsoft 365.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Just as a package, you're going to go – why would you do anything else?
Right.
But now what's built into 365 is the Microsoft Teams.
Yep.
So if you're, you know, when so we talk about collaboration, I want to be collaborative. I want to work from home or work from wherever. Well, you need collaboration tools. And so for us, when we started adopting Microsoft Teams, it, you know, there's other things. There's other things out there, Slack or whatever you can use. This, just because we're a Microsoft shop, it's great that it's built into our technology.
You already pay for it.
Yeah, you got it. Why not use it? It's an incredible tool that I think is so unrecognized and so underutilized because it really helps with collaboration, especially in professional services.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great plug, Wes, because my company provides Office 365
services. Okay, well, didn't know that.
I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, that actually one of the things I mentioned in the article is that, you know, that generation, the younger generation, sending an email internally is kind of the equivalent of sending a postcard out of your organization and back in. Let's get it in a tool where like Slack or like Teams, where it stays and lives and it's near the project or thing that you're working on.
Right. And even if it's Skype and you're chatting, there's a chat function on Teams, but you're right. And for me, what I found is once we've adopted it, it makes my life so much easier that I don't have 25 emails on one subject. I can go to the chain and just see everything, the document we're talking about, everybody's comment on my time from any device at any place, any time, and never really fall out of the communication chain.
Yeah. Excellent. That's a terrific recommendation. One of the other things that I picked up on the book is that you and the partner, and I've seen it firsthand, like to every hour, and you said in your book, he's like a cyborg. He's got a Fitbit. It reminds him to get up and spend time walking around the office talking to the people.
Well, it's back to that intentional, you know, and it's a philosophy that I, not that I came up with, it's not unique to me, but just that I adopted somewhere along the way of this whole thermostat or thermometer type attitude, which is, you know, either you're going to set the temperature, you're going to be the thermostat, and you're going to be the one that sets the temperature of the organization, or you're going to be the thermometer, which is you're the person that reacts to the temperature in the room. I'm cold, I'm hot, I don't like this, I don't like that. So I think in general, most people are thermometers by nature, and so to be an effective leader, yeah, I find that, I don't think it's all, especially in accounting, it's not natural. And so I have to make myself get up, because I could sit in my office and I'd be perfectly happy not talking to anybody all day long. That works great for me. Yeah. But I know that for me to affect change and to be what I need to be, and I don't do it as well as I should. There's no question about that. But the times that I do it, it's intentional, and it has to be something I go, okay, Wes, time to get up and make the trek, right? Yeah, and it does help the Fitbit remind you every hour, you know, to get out of your seat for a different reason.
Yeah.
So
you accomplish both with that. You
know, absolutely.
I think a lot of managers and leaders, they think they have to pick up, leave their work, and it becomes disruptive. But it really needs to be looked at as necessary to spend time with your people and at a personal level, too. You bring that up. Yeah, and it's not about getting, how am I going to get this work done? It's how am I going to lead these people to get this work done?
Yeah, and our role as leaders is to develop the people around us and have a better team overall. And if we spend our time doing that, our leadership does that. It's how you affect change in an organization. If you're not coaching from the top down, if you're not leading from the top down, we keep waiting for the millennials or these other generations bottom up to change our organizations. That is not going to happen. Well, it's going to happen, but it's going to be very disruptive if that happens. They're going to leave and start their own, or something's going to change. And so, you know, whether it's you take the approach, if you can't beat them, join them. Even if that's your approach, you need to join them. You need to lead the way, yeah.
So we're kind of getting towards the end of the time. Curious as to what's next. You've done some writing. Are you going to continue with the writing? Are you going to get into more books? Anything else?
What I did this year, I sat down with the team around me, the business development team, and I asked them, like, I need you to look at my time and tell me what I'm doing wrong and right. Well, where am I being effective with my time? Because I found in the past year I'd been not as targeted. I would take anything that came along. And so I've already this year turned down several opportunities to speak because it just wasn't good use of my time. So I'm trying to be more focused, and my focus has to be on the organization and leading it. And so this year has just been trying to reinforce some of the same things. We've got some things coming up that we're gonna implement. We're changing some of the things that we do for our clients. So I think I talked about that earlier, where, you know, we've started taking what we do for growth, like for marketing and business development and things, because we've been successful at it. We're introducing that to our clients, you know, right? So that doing more than just accounting and tax, we're helping them grow and develop because we've done that. Whether it's inbound marketing, we may not do it for them, but that strategy and that leadership, that's we're starting to do that, which is a great thing for us and our clients.
Yeah, y'all have been very opportunistic because there's also MRZ Financial, there's Absolutely. Sky Valuations.
Absolutely.
And I don't know which division that's operating under or if it's going to be a new division. But
yeah, right now it's just part of our CPA firm. We labeled it MRZ Ignite, and it's just a service line, and it's meant to ignite your business. And so we've been real careful about it. I think we've got three or four clients engaged at this point. And it's because they asked us, like, okay, we see what you're doing, and it's not CPA stuff, but we want to do what you're doing. Like, okay, well, I was like, well, we have the people, the team, and the history. Why wouldn't we do that? And so it's just one more way to add value to our clients. So I love it. So, you know, it's a lot of fun.
Well, terrific. Well, I'm going to tell you, Wes, MRZ really is a gold standard, not just for CPA firms, but for companies, something you should be really proud of.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Violent Leadership. Do you want to tell people where they can find it, where they can
get it? Yeah, well, sure. It's available on Amazon, both in hardcover, paperback, or, like you said, even Audible. I didn't read it. I had someone else actually read it. I wasn't sure I could stay focused for that long. That gets outside of my attention span. Yeah, it's available, and I love to talk about it. Share with me join me on LinkedIn or on Twitter, and I speak at several. Right now, it's been CPA type organizations that I've had some opportunity to speak. So I'm going to keep doing that, and hopefully continue to affect change.
You know, when we have authors on here, I always ask them, do you know who's on the books people also buy? Do you know who's under yours?
I don't actually.
So you ever read Traction by Gina
Wickman?
So
I have.
That's something people buy.
It's a great book.
It is, right?
Yeah.
It's a little early for my company's ad. I got through halfway and I'm like, let me read this when I'm a year down the road. But
yeah, you know, I know on your list, I meant to say this is there's because I was thinking, I was like, can you add this question about a book, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm going to answer that question because it was on your list because you made me think about it. So now I have to say it since you made me think about it. Because, I was going through my mind, there's a lot of great books, you know, whether it's Simon Sinek or Pangelin. There's so many great authors. So Evan Tiris brought me a book. He's a practice growth partner in our organization. I think, Troy, you're reading it too, right? We're having our whole group read it, called The Challenger Sale. Little unknown book. Man, what an incredible book about our perceptions on what it means to sell and the personality types. It totally turns the apple cart upside down about what we think the most successful salespeople are. And so while I don't always view myself as a salesperson, there's an element of, of course, I'm selling our organization, right? So it's a great book for people who are trying to grow their organization. And more particularly, if you are in a sales role, it's an incredible book that will change your mind on how to approach prospects.
It's a challenger.
The challenger sale.
Challenger sale. Yeah. And I love it you mentioned Sinek, too. When I was reading your book, I'm like, he knows Sinek.
What a great author, right? Yeah. I mean, great book. That's the standard.
Well, very good. I could do this all day.
I could too.
Yeah. We're go ahead and get wrapped up. Everything that Wes talked about today will be in the show links. So we'll have a link to your book, to the Challenger Sale, my company to install Office 365.
Right, there you go.
If you're not on it.
Absolutely.
Yet.
My company for inbound marketing.
That's right. Yeah. Zebra.
Should be doing it. Yeah.
But absolutely take a look at Wes's book and take a look at his company, too. It really is, as I said, the gold standard. So thanks for joining us today, sir.
Thanks, guys, for having me here. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for coming. Now y'all go out and close some business.
All right.
This is Big Ideas Small Business Follow-Up.
We're back with Big Ideas Small Business
Follow-Up podcast. And so we're sitting here with Troy Sanchez. We actually referenced Troy a few times in our last interview. Troy works for Middleton Rain Zapata. He's a practice growth director for West Middleton, who we just had as a guest. So welcome, Troy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it. I was wondering when this invitation was going to come.
So one of the things we like to start with is tell us a little bit about your background.
Mm-hmm. So originally came to Houston from Michigan, well, via North Carolina, Georgia, back in 2012. Used to work special event security over at NRG Park with the Houston Texans, the rodeo, concerts, whatever's going on out there. And finally just got burned out doing that, did that for about 8 years, and a good friend of mine introduced me to a good friend of his, which happens to still be, he's at MRZ, handles the bookkeeping side of the house, and just said, hey, this new firm up and coming, they're looking for to recruit, and are you interested? And I was like, sure, I'll talk to him. And I actually originally interviewed for a bookkeeping position.
Do you know anything about accounting?
I did some accounting in college, but I was just looking for a place where I could get my foot in the door, show them what I could do, and then, you know, grow within the firm. And interviewed with them. They called me back and said, hey, we actually don't want you for the bookkeeping position because of your background. You love talking to people and walking around. We feel like we'll just lose you in 3 months. Mm. But, hey, we want to introduce you to Evan Tiris, who Wes mentioned earlier. He's our practice growth partner and oversees our marketing and business development. And said, why don't you sit down with Evan? He's thinking about bringing on another business developer. And I said, that's awesome. Yeah, let's do that. That's definitely what I want to do. And long story short, here I am.
And so that's sort of a sales role or business development role. Have you ever done anything like that previously?
I did, yeah. So in North Carolina, I was – with the company I worked for, it was a contracting company, and they asked me to go work at where I was at Wake Forest University. But then part of my job when I wasn't working the games was to go around the state and try to meet with other colleges, professional teams, Carolina Panthers, and try to pick up the services there. So I did have that background.
So I had a question. You know, you talked about when you walked into MRZ, everything looked different. What do you think they're really doing within their business that is giving them such a competitive edge that's helping them be so successful? Yeah.
Great question. I'll go back to when I had my initial interview. What really drew me to the firm was the outside-the-box thinking that they had. Mm-hmm. To, for as you guys have already met with Wes, and you know we have Stan Range, James Zapata, John Meadows, list goes on our partners. But for them to be able to realize their weaknesses and their strengths, but to know that, yes, the stereotype of a CPA out there is they just don't like to talk to people, which is different from our firm, but they still knew that, hey, this isn't something that we want to do. Where at a typical CPA firm, it's the partners, if they want to build their book of business, or if you're a manager and you want to become a partner, you got to get out there and develop your business yourself. Well, that also takes time away from your clients. And for them to take a step back as a business owner and to give away that piece, because it's tough when you're a business owner, Brian, you're a business owner, and you know it's tough. You want to do it all yourself. And for them to be able to say, you know, we're not great at this, let's bring in Evan, who they hired a year and a half before I, to start this position, and then for them to be able to get to the point where they were able to bring on an additional person, myself, where I was very fortunate, that what drew me to them to say, hey, you guys are good at this piece. We need you to get out there, develop the business, and then they're the closers. We come in, introduce them to our prospect and the new clients and say, hey, we think you're a great fit for them.
Yeah, and Wes talks a lot about the five P's. I don't remember all five, but one that stuck with me is purpose. Y'all came in with purpose. There's a piece of this organization that y'all are responsible for, and there's a reason why, you know, to allow the CPAs to focus on being accountants, not business development people. And the other interesting thing, in the book, they went back and forth, the partners, about investing, I think it was like $3,500 into telemarketing, which really wasn't done in the CPA. And they're like, that's a lot of time for them. It was a lot of money. And this is Evan's idea. And then once the calls would come in, he would pick it up. And it worked. They had an inbound funnel. So it was kind of, I guess, innovative in that industry, although it doesn't really seem that innovative in other industries.
Right. Right.
But it was, you know, some of those early risks that the firm took to enable this growth. Right.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good point, too, that they recognized the areas where they had weaknesses, and they were cognizant of their strengths and weaknesses, you know, kind of like a business self-awareness, that they knew that they needed to fill those roles with somebody who was really good at that. Yeah, and that would be, I guess that would be you.
Yeah, I think, you know, in a lot of what we talked about with Wes is sort of counter thinking, and a lot of people think you're weak there, so we need to develop you in that area.
Yeah.
No, you need to find another person to work in that area, and let's look at your strengths and continue to develop those, and that seems to be the philosophy. Do you recognize that firsthand at MRZ? Is there any, I guess, examples of just say development in general, how they develop their people?
Yeah, we just started this, I guess not just started, beginning of this year, we started the coaching sessions where you're actually sitting down with who your direct is. And as at first, you know, I was hesitant for it because you're sitting down with your boss and you're going to go over your strengths and weaknesses, and obviously you don't want to say your weaknesses in front of your boss, but as we sat down, it truly was a coaching session. They're there to help you develop, what can I do for you? It was questions of, hey, what can I do for you to help you get better at the things that you think you're lacking? And so they do it once a month, and I love it. And it was started by, definitely from Amanda Schneider, our HR director, and she's done a wonderful job with that. And so I'm now a huge advocate of it. I think it's great. It's really helped me develop, and I'm actually going to sit down with Evan today to have our next one.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah, I've definitely been in companies before where, you know, and I think communication is huge, first of all. But I think, you know, some companies don't do a great job of communicating with their employees or offering anything like coaching like you just described. And that makes it really difficult for the employee. First of all, if there are areas that management feels they're weak in, they're not made aware, makes it difficult for them to improve. So, you know, I think that's great to offer something like that where, you know, you have an open conversation about, you know, what's going well, what areas could be improved, and then how do you improve them? And, you know, that's great for the employee, great for the company. I think, you know, as an employee, when you feel like, you know, they're interested in your success. Mm-hmm. You know, that makes you feel more commitment to the company. And, you know, plus the company gets better results because the employee knows how to improve. And, you know, if you don't know what the problem is in the first place, how can you improve it?
Yeah. And something else that the firm did, and Ryan, you've been at the office where we have an open door policy, and it truly is, because our office is so modern, we don't have any doors on our offices. So it's the staff or myself, mm-hmm. someone needs to go talk with their manager, you can. I mean, we do have little signs where it says, do not disturb, just because sometimes you're on a phone call or you're talking with a client. But, mm-hmm. Yeah, the staff know they can walk in, ask a question anytime they need.
Let's talk about some of the fun stuff that y'all do. So some of the things that stood out in the book, the quarterly employee of the, I guess, employee of the quarter, $500 deal. Do you really you count up?
They do.
They count the money out?
They count the money.
By hundreds?
Yeah, they do by hundreds, yeah.
Have you ever won this award? Not yet?
I have not, no.
I'm not yet.
There's more deserving people at the firm. I'm just the biz development guy. It's the team, the staff, the tax staff, the audit staff, the managers. They're really doing the hard work, getting there with the clients and making sure that we deliver on all those promises that I make.
Yeah. Well, you haven't won it yet. Another thing that he talks about is, and I've seen firsthand, all the company swag that they, not external, I mean, you do that too, but internally they brand these guys, right? Well, you got a full closet of MRZ stuff?
I do, yeah. They've launched a website where the staff, where all the employees can go on and purchase more shirts, or mm-hmm. if it's the, you know, coffee mugs, that sort of thing. They do foam finger. I don't know if you've seen that, or yep. MRZ. So
you travel with that, don't you?
We do travel with that. Yes, we try to put that on our MRZ Instagram.
Do you guys have like those T-shirt guns yet?
We don't have the T-shirt guns yet. It's, yeah, we may have to try that, but Amanda may not like that one.
And then I think it's Amanda that he mentioned who brought on things for, like, there's a nursing room for pregnant, or I guess not pregnant, but postpartum
yep.
moms. Mm-hmm. So you can, I guess, bring your child to work if you had to, mm-hmm. have some privacy. There's a lot of thought that goes into making employees comfortable, productive, and happy. I'm sure there's a million examples, but any other examples that you find really unique?
It's very family oriented, and you know, I feel that their coworkers really aren't the coworkers; they're family. You know, a lot of them are very close friends of mine. And you know, when I tell these stories to people who don't work for the firm, like, you're always hanging out with your coworkers. I'm mm-hmm. like outside of work, and I don't consider them coworkers. I consider them really close friends, and we enjoy hanging out, which then creates a great environment at the office because you love who you're working with. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it's great team camaraderie. When we have company events, they ask us to bring our families, our spouses, girlfriends, boyfriends, the kids, and so it's great.
Good stuff. So, any other closing thoughts about MRZ? Don't forget you meet with Evan later. I have a great boss.
That's right.
what are your kind of career aspirations?
Oh, good question.
At MRZ, like, what is your goal?
My goal would be, I'd love to become a partner one day, and working at a CPA firm when I first started, you know, I didn't know if that was a reality because, you know, you have your lawyers that have to be attorneys and CPAs, they're CPAs, and I'm obviously not on that path to become a CPA, but to see, you know, my director, you bring up Evan, he made partner doing what he does, which then opened up the door for me and be like, hey, it is possible to, as long as you're working hard, the firm is going to take care of you, and that's conversations that happen in our coaching sessions, and I, you know, he knows that's one of my goals, and he said he's gonna, you know, help me one day reach that. So that's, you know, that's kind of my ultimate goal, see where this can go, because I definitely love the firm. I always want to work somewhere where I know that I can more or less control the service, but that has the same beliefs that I do, and they truly do. And that's another item that drew me to the firm, is like, this place has the same beliefs that I do, so why would I want to go anywhere else?
That's awesome.
Very good. That's a good question. Well, best of luck making partner. Let us know how we can help. We really appreciate you joining us on Big Ideas Small Business.
Yeah, I appreciate thanks it. So much. It's yeah. been great.
Thanks right, for having me, guys.
Troy Sanchez. All right. Now y'all go out and close some business.
All right. Bye, guys.
Central Texas rains, the strongest drink I've found.
Thank you for listening to Big Ideas Small Business. Follow us at BISB Media and visit our website at www.bisbmedia.com.